Illinois primary election day is Tuesday, March 17th. Before you cast your ballot, make sure you understand what's on it. Start with our WBEZ Chicago Sun-Times voter guide. Find it at wbez.org/voterguide.
Hey Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around till the end of the episode to get a rundown of the latest stories happening right here in the Chicago area. But first, let's get to the conversation you clicked on. We still don't know where a future Chicago Bears stadium will be, but the city's men's professional soccer team, the Fire, are coming to the South Loop. The team broke ground this week on a $750 million privately funded stadium in the 78, a large vacant site just north of Chinatown. Today, we'll hear from some neighbors who say they want more public input on this massive project, and we'll hear what the developer and Mayor Johnson have to say about it. At the table was Sarah Tang, who's director for programs at the Coalition for a Better Chinese American Community, and Roderick Wilson, who's executive director of the Lugenia Burns Hope Center. Now, the groundbreaking has happened. The project is suddenly more real. So I started by asking the guests how they're feeling about that. Here's Sarah.
I have very mixed feelings. I think we still have not gotten the answers that we've been looking for since June when the plans were announced. As things move forward with a lot of folks cheering them on when we've talked to them for months about our concerns, it's just a little bit concerning to me.
Mm. Rod, how about you?
I think it really depends on the process that we have moving forward. It really depends on the securities we give community members, those type of things. Because it can be a good thing. It doesn't have to be a bad thing. It's just if we put business interests before the people, then that's when it moves into more of a negative thing. So I think what we want to do is make sure at the beginning of this thing that we are doing what we can to make sure the community benefits from this development so that it is something that is something good for the city of Chicago.
So you're both part of this newly formed community benefits agreement for 78 Coalition, or CBA 78. Mm-hmm. Rod, why was the coalition needed?
Because we can't trust lawmakers and business to act in the best interest of community residents, especially low-income and working families. I think, you know, business interest is around business. They're looking at how to make the biggest dollar. Sometimes politicians' interest is about how much money they can get to help the business out, where government is supposed to be the checks and balance for business. Sometimes they work hand in hand, and then the people, especially low-income and working families, have a negative impact from that. Mm. So it is important for us to get people engaged early on this about what they want to see and how they feel it will benefit them.
Yeah, piggyback off that, Sarah. Tell us more about what the coalition's calling for.
Yeah, the coalition is unique in the sense that it's a cross-ward coalition. We're forming a coalition across 3, 4, 11, 12, and 25. These are neighbors within the 5-mile radius of the stadium. And we've seen studies show us that rent speculation can start today because we broke ground, right? Mm-hmm. So post-breaking ground, speculation starts. And the homeowners, the renters in these areas are vulnerable. They've already felt displacement pressures and risk factors in the current state. So the coalition is calling for housing, better housing. The affordable housing that they're talking about is the ARO requirement.
Which is what?
Which is the affordable rental ordinance.
Okay.
So that's 20%. But that's only what the government requires. And so we're calling for more robust housing. We know that the affordable units don't actually work for families in Chicago. And we're calling for better transportation planning. So we're looking at how do we keep folks in place who've been living here for decades mm-hmm. and built these communities.
Rod, I mean, do you think there needs to be more of a focus on public housing as opposed to affordable housing? Right. And for folks who don't know the difference, public housing, government owned, heavily subsidized, affordable housing, usually privately owned. And it's these mixed income development projects.
Correct.
Like the one we're talking about now. Tell me more.
Definitely. Because public housing is really only true, really affordable housing. No matter what your income is, your rent is based 30% of whatever your income is. So your rent fluctuates with your income. What Sarah was speaking to the ARO, the Affordable Requirements Ordinance, it doesn't hit the population that we want. You know, right now, you have to make 60% of the AMI for a family of four. You're talking $60,000, up to 60%. They could go lower, but most developers aren't going lower. So even when they say they're making affordable housing, it's for a higher end. You know, if I'm working full-time at McDonald's, $16.40 an hour, which is over double the national minimum wage, I'm making 30% of AMI. They're not building housing at 30% AMI.
And AMI is the area median income.
Correct. Yeah, thank you. And so they're not building housing with the ARO at 30%. Most of it is at 60%. So when we say it's affordable, it's really affordable for who? Mm. And so that's why with public housing, you know, and we're not saying it shouldn't be some of those units, but that shouldn't be the standard of what we call affordable housing, because now we're off the gate excluding a demographic of folks from being able to live down there.
I see. And we'll dig more into this, but I want to backtrack for a second, Sarah, because we talked last summer. I think it was August.
Yes.
And this was before the Chicago Fire had gotten the official green light from City Council. You were just as worried back then. Have any of your concerns been addressed?
No.
Since our conversation?
No, we've continued to have conversations. Like you mentioned, we're talking in August. September was the Plan Commission vote. We were there, talked to commission members before. We're at the commission meeting. And we went to City Council also to provide testimony in September when it was pretty much a week after the Plan Commission vote. But we've had these conversations. I've talked to Related Midwest again in between, just one-on-one. No answers, not the ones that are satisfactory.
And Related Midwest is the developer.
Is the developer.
Yeah, we sent an invitation to the Chicago Fire as well as Related Midwest to join this conversation, but no one from either organization was available. Your biggest concerns, and tell me, and I want to hear from both of you, tell me as it relates to the specific nearby neighborhoods like Chinatown, yes, and Pilsen and Bronzeville. You first, Rod.
I think, you know, with the community benefits agreement, we have any type of development, the neighboring communities are going to be affected by it. And so, and many times we think it's a good thing, but sometimes it does cause gentrification and folks with lower income, working families are pushed out of the area. But also with the development this size, it's impacting everybody because they're talking about using $750 million of TIF dollars. You know, they may take the dollars from a particular area, but what is taxes? Our tax dollars goes towards city services, our taxing districts, the parks, the schools, police, fire, those type of things. When you create a TIF, every time the increase goes up, instead of going to those districts, it goes into a pot.
And you're talking about tax increment financing.
Correct. So when you're putting $750 million for a development, that means that money is not going toward the schools. It's not going towards the parks, police, fire, those taxing districts. So now all of us, so we got a small amount of money that affects everybody. So this affects everyone, not just the neighboring neighborhoods. We definitely know that. But also we want to make sure anybody can afford to live there. We don't want to create an exclusive community.
Staying with TIFs for just a moment, sure. Sarah, why are TIF funds allowed to be used for this project?
This was announced in 2019, this TIF, mega TIF of $700 million. I can't tell you why it's allowed, but I think it's one of the easier tools for development available. We haven't gone very creative with the way we finance these things, right? Folks have talked about bonds as alternatives, but we can't really dig into it here today. But I think the TIF raises a lot of questions because we raised the same questions at the Plan Commission meeting. We don't know what the TIF funds will be used for. It's already generated over $70 million. Originally, $551 million were assigned to improvements in transportation and roadways. Mm. And those have been rolled back because of the price tag. So we're going into this groundbreaking without knowing how our public dollars will be used. But also, in truth, we've already used public dollars to build the Wells-Wentworth connector to bring electricity and plumbing to the land. It's previously rail yards.
Mm,
so
okay.
It's been used. We don't know how much has already been spent and how the future will look like. And when we raise this question with the mayor or with the DPD commissioner, we've not gotten any answers other than we'll see.
So it sounds like you're saying there's still a lack of transparency on that piece, the funding piece as well. So talk to me about Chinatown and your specific concerns.
Yeah, Chinatown, we've been I think, overlooked as a commercial district only. We have a lot of residents that live there. Our seniors have been waiting for senior housing for 20 years. There's a wait list of 15 to 20 years right now. So I think Chinatown, seeing that us that have been landlocked for years, right, since the highways were constructed, we're bound by these railroads and the highway. We haven't been able to expand other than South and Southwest, and we know that that impacts our neighbors. When we look at a piece of empty land north of us, really connected to our park, the residents are asking me, why can't we use that for senior housing? Why can't we use that for a new community center? And we, you know, went without a park for 40 years. The Pingtown Park was only built in the near memory. So what is this development going to pose as risk to that park? Mm-hmm. The field house is right at the southern exit of the 78. Kids come every day to the field house to swim, to play basketball. What is that going to look like for our residents when we already know that people going to Soldier Field, Winter Arena, McCormick Place are parking in Chinatown?
And there's some other pieces too. I mean, according to census data, the area that includes Chinatown is growing, right? There's been a lot of coverage sort of touting that.
Yes.
It's a positive thing, but that it's not the full story. Gentrification, I know, is also something that's on your mind.
Yeah, it's not the full story. I would say a couple factors. We moved. We were displaced once in 1912 from Clark and Van Buren to the current site. And I think that's one of the reasons why we've stood very strong in our current location. The growth is coming in as new immigrants coming to the U.S. They're moving south and west. McKinley Park Development Council Executive Director Kate Eakin talked about how 60% they've seen a 60% growth of Asian residents in McKinley Park. People can't afford to stay in Chinatown, nor are their housing stock enough or of quality for folks to want to stay. So people are moving southwest along Archer Avenue. This growth is true in the sense of residents, but when we're looking at businesses, we're seeing our most beloved legacy businesses shutter their doors over the last few years. Seven Treasures, Tasty Place. These are places that people hang out at, and they can buy a meal for under $10. Mm. The growth in economic, in terms of the economy, is going to the franchises from Asia, and those dollars are not staying invested in the community. The owners don't live in the city even. So the dollars are not going back to the schools, not going back to the businesses.
Rod, for Chicagoans who are listening right now, and they might not live nearby the stadium, why should they care about this?
Because their tax dollars are being used. You know, also when they develop the community, they may want to live down there. And if we don't have an affordable housing and you're working full-time, minimum wage, or a little bit above or below, you're not going to be able to live down there. So this is going to affect them regardless because, again, when we use TIF dollars, it takes away from the schools and everybody's community. It takes away from the police and everything. I want to make sure I keep hitting that point because I think people don't really understand what TIFs really are and what they take from our community and take from the services that we are supposed to be guaranteed to have. Mm. So it affects all of us. So yes, everyone should be concerned about it. And I want to say also too, I think that the fire and related Midwest missed an opportunity to be here today because this could be a chance for them to show that they are good partners with the community and really begin to work with us on developing something instead of, you know, not coming or, you know, but this is a way to be good community partners.
Well, you know, we recently invited billionaire fire owner Joe Mansueto on the show to discuss the stadium, the future of the 78, and just other ways that he's investing in Chicago. Mm. He declined to come on the program. Any message for Mansueto specifically?
What I would say is let's not make this another Abla Homes. When Abla Homes, and they got 25 acres of public housing land, it was just taken. It was no regard for the promises that were made to the community that was displaced on that land, and they didn't really care. And I said, this is an opportunity to work with the community to really build something that benefits everybody. And I think this is a good chance for them to not right that wrong, in my opinion, but let's see what we can build together. But really together, not just you're going to do something that's going to be your way or no way. No, we need to figure out how we're going to do this together.
And Sarah, the fact that the stadium, as I've mentioned, is being privately funded, it sounds like the cost isn't coming out of our pockets.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true? And does any of that make this project and the process any easier to accept?
I think the cost, like we talked about the TIF dollars, of course, is out of our pockets. But I think the cost is actually Chicago's future here. Joe Mansueto has spent a lot of money buying up a lot of different properties over the years in Chicago. You know, when they looked at the fire, they looked at the Michael Reese Hospital site, they looked at Lincoln Yards. These could have been kind of rescue mission type of development for our existing vacancies, but they chose to build on empty land. So I guess my question to Joe Mansueto is, what do you think the future should look like for Chicago? You're buying up so much land. But to Mayor Johnson, we need to know that billionaires are billionaires for a reason. They're not thinking about their interests of the people, like Rod talked about earlier.
Speaking of the mayor, no, I want to just add to mm-hmm. your point and mention what Mayor Johnson recently told CBS News Chicago. He said, quote, "We're going to continue to have ongoing conversations as this project develops. This is an investment in the people of Chicago. This is not just about a sports team." So
yes.
Go ahead and continue. I mean, does this feel like an investment for all?
No, I mean, I talked about this at our press conference. There's no way to get to the site as it stands today. You can pull up a yacht, you can take the water taxi, but if you're taking the red line, you're going to walk uphill half a mile to get to the site. You can drive, but you know, it's very obvious that that we're taking a handout, quote unquote, from a billionaire. It's not a handout. This is an investment. He stands to benefit and profit from this. And we have to demand better accountability when billionaires are playing with our community like this. The whole South Side is under attack. We have private developments everywhere on the South Side, and mm-hmm. we're just seeing new plans for Lincoln Yards, which is a failed development.
Yeah, and the meetings, there have been several meetings, dozens of meetings hosted by the developer Related Midwest. My understanding is that there were no meetings in the 11th Ward, and meetings primarily happened in the 3rd Ward, mm-hmm. right, Rod?
Yes.
I mean, have you talked with 3rd Ward residents who say they weren't included in this conversation?
Definitely. I mean, and when you talk about the 3rd Ward, it's mainly down in the South Loop area. Mm. You know, I've talked to a lot of seniors, a lot of public housing residents, other folks didn't even know anything about it.
So it's
in
the 3rd Ward. It's being marketed primarily to the South Loop.
Yes.
Mm. Cool. Yep.
So a new stadium, without a doubt, is in the works, right?
Mm-hmm.
As we said, there was a groundbreaking this week.
Right.
Any part of this project, does any part of it excite you?
No. I mean, the rest of the site will be luxury high-rise apartments. I want to make that clear. So I think when you asked earlier about why other Chicagoans would care, every neighborhood is seeing new high-rises going up. And that's not really helping anybody, I think, in the community. So for us, if it's going to be a land that's not accessible by bus or train, people have to park or boat there, I don't know who would live there, right? And it's going to be the direct neighbor to Pingtown Park. We've also heard from friends of the Chicago River and the McKinney Park Development Council that they're doing the minimum kind of sidewalk at the riverfront. It's going to be a very narrow sidewalk. And then there's going to be like pickleball courts or play soccer fields right by the river. So it's not meant for the people. I think the design is very clear. And they've made the part immediately north of the Pingtown Park the Wilds. It's going to be another nature area that buffers. So to me, that's not a sign of inviting the community in.
So since we're already here, I mean, what would make them good neighbors, Related Midwest and Chicago Fire?
I think coming to the table is step one, right? We're hopeful that they would show up today, but they didn't. I think, yeah, I'll let Rod take this too, but I think coming to the table, really listening and being creative with us. And I really want also the city of Chicago to be better advocates for our communities.
Yeah, last word to you, Rod.
Yeah, I agree with Sarah. And I think the thing that excites me is engaging residents on being able to create the community they want to see. That's what excites me. What someone else's plans are, that's their plans. But this is an opportunity to get folks engaged, to get folks, you know, help them understand their power and how to shape something that they may not think that they have the power to shape. That's what excites me the most. So I'm excited about, you know, being a part of this campaign and engaging folks and helping folks see their power and what they can do when they come together. So that's the most important thing. So that when we create something, we create this community, we can have it for low-income and working families and others, but not just for high-end incomes, and that's it. So this is I think it's a really great opportunity for us all based on what we do.
We'll leave it there. That's Roderick Wilson, who's executive director of the Eugenia Burns Hope Center, and Sarah Tang, who's director for programs at the Coalition for a Better Chinese American Community. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Turn to the top stories of the day with WBEZ's Claire Lane and Summer Van Benten and Violet Miller with the Chicago Sun-Times. First things first, what is with this fog? I started by asking Claire when we can expect it to clear up.
Yeah, it's kind of freaky this morning. So much for being the city by the lake. It's kind of like we're the city on the edge of the earth right now.
I mean, it was beautiful to look at the fog over the lake. It was a nice sight.
Right, but it's not going anywhere, at least not for today and into tomorrow. A National Weather Service actually has a dense fog advisory until 3 o'clock, which is pretty late for fog. Usually with the air pressure, it kind of clears up. And the National Weather Service is saying if you're along the lake at all today, you're not going to be out of the haze. So you're going to be kind of in a cloud of this. And then tomorrow, with some rain, with the fog, the temperatures are going to rise too. Could see 70
yes.
degrees tomorrow. So there's a little bit of a silver lining.
Spring,
for folks
is that you?
Spring is springing.
The grills.
Right. So tank tops, but you're going to like be wiping off your glasses all day with that fog. With that.
Speaking of tank tops, I did see a man cross the street in front of my vehicle yesterday with a tank top and shorts.
It's the season.
I said on March 4th? Okay. Summer, how is this fog and everything impacting travelers?
Yeah, I was checking Fly Chicago and I'm seeing some delays, so definitely if you're traveling today, check and make sure that your flight is still set to depart at the same time that it was scheduled for. I'm also seeing reports that 100 flights were canceled out of Midway. So again, just take a look and check.
Check before you go. Let's pivot to some other news here, Claire. As the war in Iran rages on, I mean, Congresswoman Delia Ramirez joined in the loop yesterday morning ahead of the Senate vote on the War Powers Resolution. I want to play a little bit of what she had to say.
It is absolutely unconscionable that we are here and that we have members of Congress who continue to disregard or minimize just what this could mean for us and for the safety of people in this country, in America itself. We're all less safe as a result of this president and of these endless wars without a strategy.
Claire, give us the latest on the War Powers Resolution.
Right. So the War Powers Resolution is aimed at restricting President Trump's ability to carry out any further military action against Iran at this point. So yesterday, as you mentioned, Sasha, the Senate was able to vote. Dick Durbin and Tammy Duckworth both supported the measure in restricting Trump's abilities there, but ended up losing by 53-47 votes. Senate Republicans sort of outnumbered us. And then today, the House expected to vote on that War Powers Resolution, but it is also expected to fail, as we know, Republicans controlling that chamber. So TBD, people are, you know, still taking action, doing what we can, but so far, no luck.
Well, Violet, Chicagoans with ties to Iran and the Middle East, I mean, they've been struggling to get home.
Yeah, there were some professors at Northwestern's Qatar campus that, you know, our colleague spoke to earlier this week. You know, that campus has moved to online classes. And they told us some of them were applying for, you know, visas in Saudi Arabia to try and get out of the crossfire. But, you know, that obviously just rapidly developing situation as they, you know, shelter from rocket fire. But we also heard from, you know, Iranian Americans in Chicago earlier this week who, you know, had a lot of mixed feelings on this war. Some saying, you know, they don't want to be liberated by people like, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu and Donald Trump. So, you know, a very conflicting time, I guess, for folks with ties to the region.
You had another story about people's gas bills, and I paid very close attention because I was like, is my bill going to go up anymore? But yeah, they may go up again. And we touched on this yesterday in the program, Violet, but because you're here today and you reported on this story, I kind of want the very latest from you. Tell us what customers need to know.
Yeah, so Peoples Gas has proposed a $202 million rate hike for next year. We'll get an ICC ruling on this towards the end of the year. That's a state agency. But it would raise, you know, the average gas bill in the city $130 a year, which, you know, is nothing to scoff at. There's already 145,000 Chicago households who are behind on their gas bills or in some kind of debt to the utility. So, you know, this is obviously tough. And advocates were at City Hall the other day during a subject matter hearing calling for City Hall to stand against this. They don't have any actual regulatory authority over Peoples Gas. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in this hearing, they were able to pull out some information, including, you know, WEC Energy, the parent company of Peoples Gas, brought in $1.6 billion in profits last year, which didn't really sit right with folks who, again, were looking at, you know, tens of thousands of Chicagoans in debt to their utility.
Right. Claire, primaries, they're less than 2 weeks away, and big tech is pumping a lot of cash into the elections, including here in Illinois. How much?
So at this moment, Meta set to spend about $750,000 backing Illinois State House candidates. As we know, there's been a lot of discussion about AI data centers mm-hmm. and which candidates are sort of taking money from.
Yeah, which candidates are taking the cash?
So of this super PAC that Meta is proposing, which is called Making Our Tomorrow, it's supporting four Democratic State House primary candidates. Paul Kendrick of the 12th District, so that's like Lincoln Park. Mm-hmm. Adam Braun of the 13th, which is Uptown. Asia Carney, 34th District on the south side in the south suburbs, and Representative Jamie Andrade. And that's the 40th District, northwest side. So those are the four taking this super PAC money for now. As we know, opponents, you know, of these four candidates support legislation to raise digital ad taxes and slow that increase of some of the building of these data right. centers in Illinois, which I believe J.B. Pritzker is in the camp of.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. He wants this to be a quantum and just AI hub. Summer, more tech news.
Yeah.
Kinda. A self-cleaning public restroom coming to Wicker Park. How does it work? And who asked for this?
You know, this is really interesting. So Alderman Daniel Espada fought to have this standalone public self-cleaning restroom here in Wicker Park. Apparently there are some across the nation, but this will be the first one that is standalone and accessible to any and everyone. It'll be right above the Division Blue Line station. And I've definitely seen restrooms where the plastic paper will recycle between users, mm-hmm. but this restroom will also have self-cleaning mechanisms to clean the floor and other surfaces. So
were there a lot of dirty restrooms in Wicker Park?
I mean, I think it's more about accessibility,
no comment.
You know?
Yeah.
It
is. And it's a part of a larger effort that the city is looking at of just making restrooms more accessible
right.
to people, you know, who are unhoused.
And we got to start somewhere. So why not start in Wicker Park?
Yeah. Standalone restroom.
Summer, sticking with you. There's a man facing felony charges after an attempted puppy napping. What happened?
Look, my dog was getting on my nerves this morning, but don't take people's dogs.
Claire is shaking her head.
My God.
I know you're thinking of Gloria.
It's a shame.
Yeah.
Your precious dog.
My little sweet angel.
He was acting like a brat, but I love him dearly.
So
don't
what
take
did them. What did this guy do?
So apparently there was a van full of puppies and a Chicago man just took the van, but he was charged and none of the puppies were harmed, luckily.
It was a pet salon, pet spa,
right.
and the dogs were in transport just to get their groom on right. from a
their
nearby
groom.
Boarding facility, and
I
the car was
so
idling.
I have so many questions for this guy. What was your plan?
What was the plan?
What did you want to do with the puppies?
8 dogs inside, too.
Yeah, insane.
But they were found only 2 hours later, as Sun Times is reporting, so... You know, the dogs are back with their owners and hopefully getting lots of treats and bellies.
Well, while you're talking, Claire, tell us what other stories you're watching.
Yeah, a lot of domers in and around the Chicago area who might remember Lou Holtz, longtime Notre Dame football coach. Holtz was 89 and he died on Wednesday. He actually coached the Fighting Irish for 11 seasons, including their last national championship win, which was back in 1988. Throughout his career, though, he led 6 different schools to bowl games and was also elected to the College Football Hall of Fame.
Nice. Violet, you had a really uplifting story on suntimes.com yesterday. It was about a Southside dance company returning to practice after tragedy. What happened?
Yeah, so last month, Empire Dance Company lost two of its members in a crash on the Bishop Ford, and three more of their members were injured. Now, this is a 26-year-old dance company, mm-hmm. and they just returned to practicing for the first time since the accident in mid-February on Monday. Wednesday was last night their second practice. They're practicing for a memorial service for Isaiah Beau Flemister, the 17-year-old who was killed in the crash, as well as a later memorial later this month for Lazarus Hollywood Gonzalez, who was 25. Both were absolute, you know, core parts of this group, and their
so
fellow
tough.
Members were, I mean, they spoke very highly of them.
You know, what'd they say?
Beau was an absolute sponge. He could just pick things up. He had a great memory for choreography, and he was particularly fast, really into footwork. And so, you know, that's kind of the legacy that he leaves behind. Some of these dancers are trying to pick up. And then for Hollywood, you know, he was also a rapper as well as a dancer. So he was, you know, engaging in art in quite a few forms. You know, they spoke highly of, you know, the way he would write about personal things, despite the fact that, you know, for example, he wrote about his queer identity in his rap music, which, you know, at times put up barriers for him, but, you know, it never stopped him.
Mm. Wow. It's so young to lose their lives. And I'm glad that folks in the group are finding ways to slowly move forward and honor them. Summer, speaking of honoring, we've got homegoing services for the Reverend Jesse Jackson coming up here tomorrow in Chicago, open to the public. Mm-hmm. Where are the services being held?
Services will be held on Thursday at House of Hope. There will be a lot of individuals in attendance, a lot of big names in attendance. We have former presidents, Biden, Clinton, Obama attending. We also have performances from those like Stevie Wonder, which is extremely exciting to look forward to. And then services at Rainbow Push, at the Rainbow Push headquarters in Kenwood on Friday, or on Saturday, excuse me.
That's House the of private.
Hope, yes. House of Hope on Friday, Rainbow Push Coalition on Saturday. And that'll be a private service that will also be streamed.
And where's his final resting place?
His final resting place will be at Oakwood Cemetery.
Okay. You were in South Carolina where Jackson, you know, was laid in honor at the Capitol. How was that ceremony?
It was amazing, to say the least. It's nice to see those who grew up with Jackson, knew him in his teenage years, his childhood years, honor him in the highest state, in the highest way possible in the state, a place where they couldn't even step foot in at one point. So it was a really amazing ceremony. Thousands of South Cackalackians, South Carolinians showed up in attendance, waited even 2+ hours to pay their respects.
Yeah, no surprises there. All right, further details for tomorrow's public homegoing service. Doors are going to open to the public at 9 a.m. tomorrow at the House of Hope, as Summer just mentioned. We're going to be airing the Reverend Jesse Jackson's public service starting at 11 a.m. tomorrow right here on WBEZ. I'll be on air during the service, and I'll be joined by WBEZ alum Natalie Moore. So tune in for that and the private service on Saturday. If you want more information, the Jackson family is going to live stream all of this at jessejacksonlegacy.com. We've been talking with WBEZ's Claire Lane and Summer Van Benton and Violet Miller with the Sun-Times.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Micah Yason, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/intheloop. Thanks for listening.
WBEZ has a stacked lineup of events this spring with must-see musicians like Patti Smith and Ani DeFranco, and compelling authors like Patrick Radden Keefe, along with Gillian Flynn. For more, go to wbez.org/events.